Welcome to season 4 of the Brave Writer podcast, A Brave Writer's Life in Brief. I'm Julie Bogart, your host. This season, we are releasing via audio our most popular YouTube broadcasts. We're so excited that you can now listen to these on audio while you're running, driving in the car, or folding laundry. We will also sprinkle throughout this season original content, interviews with people I think are compelling to listen to. If you get a chance, please help us out by leaving a review at iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to Brave Writers podcast. We really appreciate it. It helps us get the word out, and it also gratifies all the people behind the scenes who work so hard to bring these to you for free. And now, let's get going with this episode. Before I started this company, I worked as a freelance writer, a freelance magazine editor, and a ghostwriter. So I've been earning money while homeschooling for most of the time that I was home educating. Yes, you can work part-time and homeschool. I totally did. And it is possible. Take some self-discipline. But I also, just so you know how crazy I am, I went to grad school, ran a business, and homeschooled 5 kids at one point in my career. Now, not everybody is as ridiculous as I am to try and tackle so much at once, but it is possible. And I'm here to tell you that it is and to share with you how, if you have dreams, whether it's earning money, going to grad school, starting a business, running a blog, whatever it is, you can do that and still be a faithful homeschooling parent. What I want to do is share with you some of my experiences as I developed into a work lifestyle while I homeschooled, and then just talk about what it feels like to earn money and be a woman and be a home educator. These are very important sort of oxymoronic identities from the way many of us think about it. There's always this little bit of guilt that I think sneaks in when we start thinking about earning money. So the first thing I want to talk about then is this, the mindset. It's okay to want to earn money. It's okay. You're not a bad homeschooler. You're not the wrong kind of housewife. It doesn't mean that you are less devoted to your children. It also doesn't mean you're a materialistic person or a capitalist. It doesn't mean that all you care about is something that is not related to your mission in life. Some people feel guilty because they don't earn money. That is the flip side of this coin, right? You've got perhaps a spouse fully supporting you and you wish that you were bringing in a little bit of cash. It's really okay to want to do that. Now, you get to decide whether you do that, but it's okay to want to, and it's actually pretty empowering to earn money. That isn't a terrible thing to feel. It's actually a satisfying thing. You've been raised into adulthood, and suddenly you realize you have the power to contribute and be compensated for that. Nothing wrong with that. Here's the second thing I want to say. Poverty drives innovation. It's a fact. Not having money drives people to become a part of this adult world that creates the place we all want to inhabit. I have a girlfriend who makes the most incredible care packages for her kids in college. I mean, they're exquisite. They're like beautiful, funny, creative, delicious. All of us have been nagging her for years. Please turn this into a business. You know why she doesn't? Her husband's a millionaire. They don't need any money. She has no interest in taking her talents and turning it into cash because she's happy. She's satisfied. Why start a business? But you know what? I'm so disappointed because my children will never have good care packages in college. That's not my gifts. That's not my skill set. And because she isn't driven by her need for cash, she doesn't feel as obligated to share her talents with the world. On the other hand, every single time I have wanted to pay for something with my kids, lacrosse, Shakespeare camp, being a part of a play, whatever, I've created a new product. You can almost trace every product in Brave Writer back to some need we had in my family at the time. But my brain was constantly sort of sorting through my skill set and what people said that they needed from me. And then I was able to take that information and translate it into a product creation. Does that make sense? So that's what I want us to notice today. The mindset is it's okay to want to earn money. And the second thing is poverty drives innovation. And you'll find that out even looking at some of the biggest companies in the world. So the third thing I want to share is that the benefit is that your adult contribution helps the world go round. Okay, that sounds like a little cliche, but I'm not kidding. There are talents and gifts and skills that you have that by offering them to the world, you are enhancing the global community. Now, I know that sounds like a huge statement, and you might be thinking, well, I sell Tupperware. How does it do that? But you know what? People who understand how to organize a kitchen and store food correctly and create order from chaos in a kitchen are a resource I could use. If you sell tea, aren't you enhancing poetry tea times and the sense of calm and comfort that comes from tea? So it doesn't have to be lofty. I'm not saying you have to create the next Apple computer company. I'm saying that your personality has a contribution to make as an adult that you can be paid for that enhances the well-being of our global community. And you get to do that. Think about all those years that you were being raised as a child into adulthood, and you start to think about, well, then who am I going to be? I mean, right now you're raising children, trying to help them figure out who they're going to be. Now, of course, homeschooling is its own career. I would never devalue that. I totally invested and loved it. But what I also realized is that in teaching my children, I was actually teaching them how to become adults, but I was also an adult. I had already made that journey. I was here. What was I going to do with my one gift of adulthood? What could I do with it? What were my gifts? What were my talents? What way could I make a contribution as an adult to the functioning of the globe? I didn't want a big career like in politics or to be a movie actress. I didn't want something that would take me away from my family. On the flip side, I did want something, some small thing that did. Because sometimes it just feels really good to use your skills, to take a little bit of time and invest it in the thing that you grew up to do. I mean, that's just a great feeling. And if we're raising our daughters and we're sitting here trying to groom them for college and beyond, are we really just saying that the one thing they should do is go through all that training and preparation and work and then just be a mother also? I hate using the word just. It makes it sound like I devalue motherhood, and you know I don't. I was a La Leche League leader. I had home births. I homeschooled. I'm all about mothering. I just flew to Peru to hang out with my adult daughter. I love being a mother. I also love being adult Julie, having an awesome adulthood. I'm into that too, and they can coexist. So let's talk about what I think the four keys are to being the kind of person who earns money while homeschooling, okay? First one, you want to determine your skills. Some of you, I know, are asking, how do I know what I want to do? One of the ways to figure that out is this. Think about what you're already good at. I was under this weird misimpression that because I was good at writing, that wouldn't be the place to earn money. I had this illusion in my mind that I should earn money by doing something hard and that I had to learn to do. I don't know where that came from, but one day when I figured that out, I thought, oh, that's so silly. Writing is my thing. Why wouldn't I earn money writing? My own mother has written 85 books, taught writing for 40 or 50 years, has been earning money doing writing her whole adult life. For some reason, because it was natural for me, I somehow eliminated it from the options. And so initially, when I was thinking, how can I supplement our income? We have five children, we're making $30,000 a year and trying to live in Southern California. What are my options? And then one day it sort of dawned on me, actually, I'm good at writing. And so at the time I was married and my husband was teaching writing. He was also a writer, composition at a local college. And he came home one day and said that he saw on the bulletin board a notice that was asking if there were any English professors who would help doctorate students get their dissertations shaped up to turn in to the committee. So people who weren't very good writers but were PhD candidates who needed someone to clean up their dissertation before they submitted it to the committee. So John came home and he said, oh, I saw this on the bulletin board. They're looking for someone. I don't really have time and I don't know if I'm qualified. And I literally went, I'll do it. He's like, wait a minute, why are you qualified? You know, my bachelor's was in history. I was published, but, you know, in things like the Wet Set Gazette, not exactly lofty publishing. And I said, I don't know why I know how to do this, but I just know I can do it. And they won't want me to do it, so why don't you tell them you're going to do it, and then you can supervise me. I'll do the work. You can come up behind me and make sure I did a good job, and then we'll get paid. It took a little courage. Anytime that you are taking a risk in your development, you're not going to feel that you are the most qualified person initially. Every business podcast I've ever listened to, every business meeting I've ever been to, every networking group I'm a part of, they've all said, jump in with both feet. Learn once you get your first job. If you have just enough talent, just enough confidence, just enough insight into the thing that you want to do, jump in. That very first, you know, paycheck is going to teach you a lot. You're going to suddenly learn in a way that you would never learn if you hadn't taken the risk to say yes to an opportunity. Don't disqualify yourself. See it as, you know, the big writing in the sky. Hey, the universe wants you for this job. That's why you heard about it. So, sure enough, John went to the school, took home our first dissertation to look at, handed it to me. I had a baby I was nursing at the time. I still remember nursing Katrin on the bed and holding the paper over her head with a red pen, and I'm making notes all the way through it. And weirdly, I was good at it. I knew exactly what to do to make this dissertation work. John came in behind me. He looked at my work. He made some suggestions. We collaborated and conversed, which was really good for us at the time. And then we returned it to this PhD student candidate, DMIN candidate, I think. And he loved it. He made all the changes, turned it in, and the dissertation board's note on the dissertation after it passed, it had failed three times. We were his fourth attempt. And the person who signed off on it wrote, you have engineered a remarkable turnaround on this dissertation. And that was because I worked on it and John worked on it and we got it done. That was my first experience with earning money with writing. And I suddenly thought, well, my gosh, if I can turn around a dissertation for somebody, there must be some market for my skills. So the next thing you knew, I was working freelance. I got hired to run a quarterly publication for the music industry. And I, you know, worked with all kinds of songwriters and helped them create books, did their quarterly publication. I was editing people whose articles were being submitted to me. Like, I was like a magazine editor. I don't have any training in magazines. Zero. Remember, I was a history major in college. I minored basically in French. I didn't take English classes. They were not my thing. I was not a journalism major, but I was a good writer and I had great writing instincts and I had always been very successful in my writing efforts in every context. So when you're thinking about your career, qualifications, and when I say career, I'm talking about part-time. I'm not talking about full-time. Qualifications have more to do with what you know you're good at than they do with degrees or certificates. And think about that for a minute. What does that tell your kids? What does it tell them? They can be successful without all the degrees. Isn't this part of what homeschooling is all about? Homeschooling is about finding that sweet spot, figuring out who you are and what contribution you get to make and get paid for. And here you are living it right in front of your kids. So one of the ways to narrow the scope is to figure out what brings you the greatest satisfaction. One of the ways that I thought I was going to earn money at one point, I sewed these beautiful flannel baby blankets when my kids were little. And I loved how they turned out. And I thought, oh, I could make these and sell these in a store. Now, this is before the internet, so we didn't have Etsy. If I had had Etsy, maybe I would have tried it. I am not a seamstress. That is not my thing. I've done quilting, but mostly just for fun. I'm not great at it. But I was under this weird misimpression that I had to have a product or that it had to be hard. And I remember running this idea past my stepmom, and she said, put your sewing machine away. You need a factory. There's no way you can sew enough blankets to make good money. And she was right. I hadn't even realized that. That this wasn't about me sewing. This was like some good idea for blankets. And then I suddenly thought, is this what I really wanted? To be in charge of baby blankets? Not really. That wasn't a good match for my skills or my gifts. I'm not a designer. I'm not great with colors. I had sort of a fortunate moment where I was making these blankets as gifts for friends, but it really wasn't my field. So you might experiment a little bit. You might even make money doing one thing and then find out later, yeah, that really was a good start, but it's not for me. I have numerous friends who've done things like Mary Kay Cosmetics, or they've done Airborne. These are like Tupperware, right? So you sign up with the company and then you resell their products. You have little parties and you invite people, you know, Pampered Chef, all of those. Those are fabulous. If you're social, if people like talking to you about the things that you use, if you're passionate about jewelry and you decide to be the person who represents those jewelry things, you can do that. Yeah. So if you like people and you're comfortable selling, then go with a ready-made product. That is something that can really dovetail nicely with a homeschool experience. Now, for people who are saying, well, I don't know what I want to do, and I don't like sales. Let me say this. If you don't like sales, if you don't like selling, then you probably don't want to be in a business that relies on you selling yourself. At that point, you might want to pick something that is putting you in the position of working for someone. For example, in Brave Writer, we have several members of our staff who are longtime friends of mine in the homeschooling world. They work for me. That's where they get their money from. They get to participate in a business they believe in, using skills they have with their history of homeschooling behind them. Well, I'm not the only homeschool business out there. Help one of your friends who wants to start a business. Be a part of it. That's how it works. I always hire the people I love and know well and trust who have homeschooling experience. There are ways to get jobs around homeschool. One of my communities early on that we started online was called the Trapdoor Society. It was a group of homeschooling moms mostly, and we would talk about, you know, music and art and books and theology and homeschooling and babies and parenting and all that stuff. And one of the things that we discovered is that we could grow through community projects. So one of the projects we did was this take a picture a day and post it on a blog. It was basically Instagram before there was Instagram. We called it Project 365. From that year, several of the women in that group have gone on to do professional photography. Like, they fell in love with photography. They got really good at it because they were obsessed with it for a year. And at the end, they started marketing themselves. Now, do they earn a full living on their photography? Well, not all of them do. But they can do it part-time, and they can make some money. So some of this can come from even a skill you don't know you even have yet.
You're listening to the Brave Writer Podcast. I'm Julie Bogart. Thanks so much for listening along. Did you know that you can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or any place that you listen to this podcast? Reviews are the way that we get the word out to others, and they mean the world to me. So if you wouldn't mind reviewing this podcast, if you haven't done so yet, I'd really appreciate it. You can always click on a link from our blog to go there directly, or you can simply go there on the app itself. Thanks a lot. And now let's get back to the podcast.
All right. So the first one is determine skills. The second one is, ready, get good at them. What do I mean by that? So once I realized that I wanted to do writing, I got really interested in it. I started reading books. I'd go to the library and read about writing, and I took about 3 hours a week at one point working on my writing. My husband at the time would watch the kids, and I would go to the library for 3 hours alone. I have famously shared that I would check out one of their private soundproof rooms, and I would go in and lock the door. Many weeks I worked on writing. Some weeks I fell asleep in a corner on the floor because I was exhausted. And other weeks, I sobbed my poor little heart out. My kids were under 10. I had 5 kids under 10. I would just lay in there and cry my heart out because I was going through something. Either a hard time in my marriage or a frustration with a child or exhaustion and overwhelm. This little 3-hour soundproof booth was my place to either grow as a writer, sleep, or bawl my heart out. I needed it. It was amazing. But that is where I got my writing skills. That's where I worked on them. That's what I did to grow. You deserve time away from your family to be the human being you were born to be, with or without them. You need it. You deserve it. All you need to do is take it. Now, will it throw a wrench in your family life if your family is used to you doing everything with them and they're the kind of people that sort of bully you? You betcha. If your family is in a system like this and everybody's used to it and it's going in this nice circle and then you do an about face and start going the other direction, they are all gonna smash right into you. They're going to crash right into you. And they'll be like, what are you doing going this way? Turn around, go back the other way. And you get to say this to your family. Love you, care about you, but now I'm leaving you. And you go get your purse and you get your keys and you trust that they'll be okay. And then you go. It's going to be the hardest thing you've done. You're going to walk out that door and feel so much guilt. You're going to wonder if the nursing baby is going to cry. You're going to wonder if you're going to be punished for it by your spouse when you get home. And you're just going to need to face it. And, you know, obviously, if it's serious, if you're being abused or controlled, then go get help, because that's never okay. You never want to accommodate that. But everything else, you just create a new normal. And you let them know, I love you. I'm giving you 100% when I'm here. And sometimes I need to go so that I can be that fully present person when I am here and not be distracted by my own thoughts. So you decide how you want to do that. All right. So you determine your skills. You get good at them. And then the first thing you do is you give them away. You charge nothing for your skills. So the first writing I did, La Leche League magazine, Wet Set Gazette, church newsletter, you know, anything that would publish me, I was letting them publish me for free. I didn't charge anybody. One of the first editing jobs I did, I didn't charge anybody. But once I had a job where I got paid, then I started to see the possibilities. So I started working in this field and I got paid for it. Then along came my friend who said, well, I know that you're a freelance writer and a ghost writer. I need help teaching my kids how to write. I homeschool, you homeschool. And I started a 7-week class, happened to be in church at the time, so we did it during the Sunday school hour. And for 7 weeks, I taught parents and educators about how to teach kids to write for free. Then I was asked to speak at a charter school in California for free. Then I was on all the early homeschool discussion boards, and there were only the Sunlight was the main one, and then there were all these different email lists. I gave writing advice and support for free. I did that for years. Brave Writer started in 2000. I did all that free stuff starting in like 96 or 97. So I didn't get paid for anything related to homeschool and writing for years. And I was happy to do it. In fact, when I wrote The Writer's Jungle, I convened a group and we were together for 6 months, and there were like 35 or 40 families. And in exchange for reading The Writer's Jungle and giving me feedback, I helped them teach their kids to write for free. This took real time out of my life, and there was not an economic return. Now, I happened to also be working in writing at the time, so I was getting paid for the other work I was doing, but I could easily see where this was going. And I still remember when I ran my very first online writing class, it was through a Yahoo group, and I charged $25 a person for an 8-week class. I still have a picture of my very first check. It came in 1999 for $25. And I think that first class made like $250 or $300. And here's what my thinking was. This will show you how broke I was at the time. I thought, oh my gosh, if I could just add $250 or $300 to our income every 8 weeks, I would feel so good about what I'm doing. That's what it's like when you start. And it was thrilling, a thrill ride, because what? Any dollar we added to our family budget felt like a big dollar. Those, you know, they say like if you go from $30,000 or $40,000 a year up to about $80,000 or $90,000, that's when you feel the most dramatic change or increase in your well-being economically. Once you get over $100,000, it's not really, it doesn't have the same sort of impact on how it feels. So if you're in that range, you know, under $100,000 and you're trying to get up to that, that's where you're going to feel this huge surge of well-being as you help your family increase their income. And literally, you can try and earn money just to pay for piano lessons and lacrosse. Like, that's a great feeling. Okay, so you start by giving it away, and then finally, you charge money. You charge money. And when you charge, you just take a risk, take a guess. Now, obviously, if you're in a system like Steeptea, there's a set amount you get based on how you sell. But when you are doing your own products, if you're selling your own stuff, pricing is always a challenge. My brother is pretty big in internet marketing, and he was a big help to me at the start of Brave Writer. If you can talk with people who understand numbers and pricing, that'll be helpful to you. Each industry is different. But one thing I know as a principle, women undervalue what they sell, and they typically price too low. So start with the number that sounds right to you and then double it and start there. That's my advice to you. Because here's the truth. People value what they pay for, and if you charge for something too low, they will automatically devalue it. They will say it really wasn't that good simply because they didn't pay very much for it. So you want to think about that, okay? One of the benefits of being more expensive, you don't have to sell as much. So I'll give you an example. I have a friend who is an artist. She teaches the best art classes. She's a homeschooler. We all put our kids in her classes. She would do like a week camp in the summer that was 3 or 4 hours a day and charge each of us like $80 and thought that was too much. I said, do you realize what your hourly is if it's 20 weeks of class and you only charge us $80 per child? But she couldn't fathom charging more than $100 because they were so broke. Your customers are not you. You're broke your customers aren't going to be. So you want to make sure you charge what your customers will pay, not what you in your brokenness can barely afford. Do you understand? That's the psychology of pricing, just as a theoretical concept for you to think about. And then the other thing you're going to find out is that as you grow your company, your business, whatever, at the beginning, there are very minimal expenses. The more you get into it, the more expenses that come. So you have to have a foundational sort of pricing strategy that makes it possible for you to grow and afford those incremental advances in expenses. If you price too low, it'll feel like a big jump for your customers when you raise your prices. So for instance, Brave Rider has had basically the same prices now on our classes because we priced them right when we started. You know, we slowly inched up, and then when we got to the right price point, we held, and Brave Rider's able to do both, have a good price point and support the business. That's what you want. So that's for business. Of course, not everybody here is talking about being an independent contractor or a business owner, but so many of you are, and I just want you to think about those ideas. There's a temptation when you're excited about your business to lose heart for homeschooling during that immediate excitement period. Like, you'll just suddenly notice that your mind and attention keeps going back to the fun you're having over in this new venture, and homeschool will start to feel like old clothes, like not so interesting. And one of the dangers there is that you do not want your children's education to suffer just because you're having more fun doing your business. So one of the things you have to do is create a structure for yourself. And I definitely had to do this. I went through all of the experiences, right? I created a morning routine that was inviolable. So when we were in our morning period, I did not get on the computer. My phone was turned off. I focused on homeschool and gave a full commitment to that morning time. Because then if something came up in the afternoon and we didn't get to our afternoon stuff, I at least knew securely that the morning had really happened and I had given my full attention to it. Did I sometimes screw it up? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially if I was having some stupid conversation on the internet that demanded my great, you know, reaction. I mean, those things happened as well. Sometimes the work was fine, the homeschool was fine, and I was just distracted by some dumb conversation on a homeschooling board. That happens too. The key is this. Be self-aware. Just be self-aware. When you notice yourself getting sucked into that vortex of displacing homeschool, realign your priorities. Remind yourself that your kids will be gone someday. The danger here is this. Your kids still deserve you as a homeschooling parent. Now, not everybody works it out the same way. But I'll share with you what my priorities were, and then you can look at them and see if they work for you. So as I was building Brave Rider, I deliberately did not ramp up until my kids were in late high school, my youngest kids, and I had five. So I didn't do the conference circuit. I didn't take speaking gigs. I didn't try to get my name sort of international. We had a discussion board at one point on Brave Rider, and I got rid of it. It was too time consuming. I kept my focus on what I could sustain while being a good homeschooling parent. And I chose to delay the growth of Brave Rider until I was through that very intense season of home education. Now, there are a lot of business owners, especially men who aren't doing the home educating, who can go, you know, conference to conference to conference. I remember talking to one guy who owns one of the writing companies. He did something like 30 conferences in a year. Out of 52 weeks, he's gone every weekend. I mean, he's just not home. I wanted to be at lacrosse. I wanted to go to plays. I wanted to have book clubs with my kids in my house. I wanted to feel like when I looked back, I had homeschooling memories. I didn't just have work memories. So it was challenging. I did do some speaking locally. I had this thing where if it was within a 50-mile radius, I would do it. I did a couple of workshops, maybe one or two a year. I tried really hard to limit and to make sure it didn't conflict with something that my kids really expected me to be a part of. That is the biggest challenge. So if you notice yourself ramping up, you've got decisions to make. Do I follow sort of the lead of my business, or do I prioritize my homeschool? And everyone works that out differently. I'm not here to judge other women who run businesses and how they've worked that out. But if your child is resenting you, that's the time to ask, is this just a little, you know, developmental phase of my child, or is there some truth in this? I remember my ex-husband saying to me that there were periods where the kids had to double click on me to wake me up, right? Because I was so connected to the computer. There were all kinds of ways to solve that. I had to solve it. I had to solve it repeatedly. When I was writing The Writer's Jungle, there was a period where it needed to be finished and I just couldn't get it done. So we set aside 2 weeks where 5 hours a day I worked in an office and I got that thing done. And my husband at the time took care of the kids. So these are the kinds of things you have to consider. You're going to have deadlines. You're going to have objectives. And sometimes they need a significant push. But figure out if you can live that pushed lifestyle, right? That's not the only way to live. For a short season, you can almost do anything. But if it's an ongoing thing where you're gone all the time. Oh, yeah, and that was the other thing. I didn't believe in my kids participating in the business when they were children, and I never wanted to drag them to a conference and have them be poster children for homeschool. That, for me, was just not okay. I had seen it done, and I didn't like the results. I wanted my kids to have a normal childhood. They could decide whatever they wanted about homeschool. They didn't have to prove to anyone that they were better writers or better kids. And I didn't want dragging them away from their home life just to prop up my business. That made no sense. I didn't want them licking envelopes, putting on stamps, delivering books. None of it. It was my business, not theirs. Now, interestingly, now that they're adults, two of them do things for Brave Writer and get paid. But that was their decision as adults, not as children, where I'm pretending that I'm teaching them about home business. I didn't want that. If they didn't ask for it, then they weren't going to have to be involved. And that was kind of a big deal to me. But of course, I was raising kids during the era where everybody was home business, home birth, home school, home, 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 home. And then I was watching. And I didn't like the results in some of the leaders of the movement. So that's what formed me. It may be different today. And the internet has changed a lot of things. And maybe your family will work out these principles differently. And then you'll do scopes that will help all of your peers. But this is what I did. Here's another reason to earn money while you are homeschooling or to keep your, quote, toe in your career field. You don't know the future. You don't know the future. Your spouse could die, or you could wind up divorced. Both of those are possible. Your spouse could be laid off or lose his career or become disabled. You might be on your own at some point. It is so important for women to remember that they have a right to be self-supporting. I remember when I paid for my van, and it was the first time I had ever taken money I earned to buy a car, it was deeply gratifying. Like, oh, I'm a grown-up now. It felt good. I'm not going to lie. So there is value. I've watched a bunch of my peer group get divorces or lose spouses to disease, like cancer, and then they don't know what to do to earn money or to take care of themselves. So it's important. And we're raising daughters with aspirations that they'll have an amazing career or future. So let's work together to live that out and role model it and be those kinds of people. I obviously love motherhood. This is not an anti-motherhood or stay-at-home mom thing. I did both. But I do think it's really important that women know that they can be self-reliant or at least meaningful contributors to the bottom line of the family. It's a nice thing.
That's it for today. I hope you found some ideas you can implement even this week. I'd love to hear from you. Follow me on Instagram at Julie Brave Writer, or you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Brave Writer. In the meantime, live honestly, write bravely. I'm Julie Bogart from Brave Writer.